This is Mythical.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hey, Nicole, what's better than a tuna sandwich?
I don't know. What?
A threena sandwich. I'm not happy about it either. Anyways, we're talking about the best sandwiches, because this is a hot dog is a sandwich.
Ketchup is a smoothie.
Yeah, I put ice in my cereal, so what?
That makes no sense.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
What? Welcome to our podcast, A Hot Dog is a Sandwich, the show where we break down the world's biggest food debates. I'm your host, Josh Scherer.
And I'm your host, Nicole Hendizadeh.
And today we are joined by Jeff Mauro. Jeff's the author of the recently published cookbook, Come On Over, 111 Fantastic Recipes for the Family That Cooks, Eats, and Laughs Together. He co-hosts the Food Network series, The Kitchen, and he is no stranger to the divisive definitions of what constitutes a sandwich, making him the perfect fit for today's question. Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on. This is very exciting. I was expecting this call, so I'm glad it came now.
I'm so glad we didn't just catch you on the toilet or something. With the call.
Same. No.
No, podcasting from the toilet, getting the Tushy Bidet sponsorship. Just saying.
There's a market, I'm sure.
Is that an automatic bidet? An electronic? Smart bidet, as they say?
No, it's not a dumb bidet.
What's a smart bidet?
I have one. I got it off Amazon like 3 years ago.
Like automatically you sit on it and it works?
I've told people this for like, it was like $169.
Stop.
An unbelievable piece of equipment and machinery. Beyond.
Send me the link.
I will. I don't think you can find it now. I think the price has increased, especially during the pandemic, because the papes, people can find the papes. And I'm sitting there on my throne upstairs, and I'm the only one that's allowed to use it. Nobody else chooses to, because it literally shoots water up your pooper. No. And some people might be shocked by that feeling, sensation. I'm not saying I love it, but what I do love is the after effects and the cleanliness and the fact that I'm eco-friendly. And I'm telling you, you just plug it in and you put it on the line, and within 5 minutes, you got something that would cost you, a $7,000 Japanese toilet. E-bidet or smart bidet.
Is it hot water or cold water? Control tap?
Hey, heated seat and heated water.
Wow.
There's even a pressure grate. And then there's a posterior feminine wash. I'm telling
you. My fiance has that one.
There's
the front feature, then there's two back features. There's a soft back feature and a classic back feature. But should we talk about sandwiches now?
We should talk about sandwiches. So Jeff, you are the self-proclaimed sandwich king. I am not sure if you are still using that moniker, but it's something that can never die.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I got that moniker when I was competing on Food Network Star Season 7. And then, towards mid-competition, Bobby Flay dubbed me Sandwich King. So I owe it all to him. And then it was my title to lose during the course of that competition. But luckily I did win, and I had 5 seasons of Sandwich King where I tooled around Chicago in the Midwest and then brought it back to the kitchen. It was very fun. And people still be like, hey, Sandwich King. I'm like, my name's Jeff. I have an identity on sandwiches. But yeah, I love it.
I feel like once, if Bobby Flay bestows a nickname on you, I feel like he's got that New York accent. So it's like, hey, Jeff, you're the Sandwich King. Yeah. It's like that when someone hits you with that, you can't get rid of it.
I was very shocked, right? You want Bobby to like you. I mean, he's like that kid in the schoolyard, who just owns it. And if you're not, he's a nice kid, but if you're on his bad side, it's probably going to be a bad 4 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I want him like me.
So I wanted him to like me, and luckily I eventually convinced him, but he's been instrumental in everything. He's awesome. But it was like during that competition when he didn't like what you did, it hurt so bad.
that frightens me so much.
Of course.
So I've been a huge fan of Food Network Star for a long time. I remember your season very vividly. When I learned that sandwiches were the entire lens at which you looked at food, I was initially like, well, how many sandwiches can you make? And then I saw what you did and I was like, oh my God, possibilities are infinite. So you were a huge part in my personal sandwich journey and like genuinely informed how I look at food and how I cook today. So like, thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Josh. That's a mighty fine compliment. And that was the big, you know, criticism I got throughout that competition was, is there enough? Will it be enough to sustain a show for hopefully several seasons, but also as a platform to launch a career and all this stuff? You know, people always have these POVs or point of views that's like, you know, I'm the healthy cook or I'm the crazy cook and I'm the one who cooks from home. And it's like these...
I have a bow tie.
I have glasses and use some xanthan gum. But, you know, so... You got these, you know, kind of tropes that you find throughout the reality food competitions. And nobody put their flag in sandwiches for seven seasons. Wait, was it? Yeah, season seven. For seven seasons, like, I'm like, I'm the guy. I go, I've been in the deli game my whole life. I worked, owned, lived in delis since I was 15 years old on up, but I'm also classically trained and I went to culinary school. So it was like, plus I'm a performer. I go, this is mine. I got this. And I go, sandwiches is the engine, you know, driving this train. And I can always rediscover new ones, right? Reinvent classics. Every continent, country, culture has their version of a handheld piece of food that could qualify as a sandwich and be categorized as that.
No, I mean, it was obviously a super smart gamble, but I mean, now that you have established yourself as the sandwich king, we need to ask you the question. We need you to go on record right now and tell us what is the best sandwich.
Okay.
Number one, no hedging.
You want my top three or the number one sandwich?
Go top three.
I like top three.
Right?
I think we should all do top three.
Let's do top three. Top three.
All right. This is, right? This is not set in stone. It changes, but my number one never changes. Okay. Top three always, it vacillates a little bit, right? Depending on, you know, if my EBA day is working. At a tap clip. Okay.
I feel that on a soulful level.
Number three might be controversial. Patty melt. I think to me, a well-executed patty melt satisfies the melt quick category. We can get in the taxonomy of sandwiches later if you want, if you ask me other questions regarding hot dogs. But in the taxonomy of the sandwich kingdom, it is to me, it fulfills both a melt and a burger. Which I have a very hard time choosing, especially at a diner when you want like that bacon grilled cheese or that turkey melt or whatever. But a well-executed patty melt with good beef, just salt and pepper, tons of gooey American cheese, good rye, marble rye, thick rye, buttered, slathered, the beef cooked to medium and everything else gooey with those caramelized onions. Forget about it. Dunk it in some yellow mustard, sweat, eat the crispy fries, chase it down with a Diet Cherry Coke. That's number three.
Poetry.
I tasted all of that in my mouth.
Didn't you really?
But I'm salivating.
That was beautiful. Thank you.
And I have a recipe in the cookbook, but I'm not just gratuitously plugging the cookbook, but I'm just, this is the key
though.
That's
the point,
man. This is what I mentioned. This is what my father, Gus, taught me growing up when he would order patty melt or a Reuben. You ask the waitress, please, when the cook is in the back plating the sandwich, can he put the sandwich directly on the French fries? Right? What? What does that mean? It creates like almost like a rack, right? Like a cooling rack to let the air circulate, let the heat circulate.
Oh my God.
Because you're right, when that perfectly crusty, griddled bread hits the flat surface of the ceramic plate, it compromises the texture instantly, starts steaming. So a lot of times by the time it hits your table, that bottom piece of bread is soggy. But if you put it on the fries, allows for movement of air, ensures crispiness, and the fries stay crispy and warm. Boom.
That speaks to one of the beauties of sandwiches. And one of the reasons I love sandwiches so much is that it's so like architecturally based.
Of course, yeah.
You know, like that's the skill in making sandwiches. People don't, you know, ascribe that to sandwich making. I know you do in terms of like exalting the sandwich as like a beautiful food, but people think it's like a simple food, but it's not so complex because there's so many levels to hit.
In culinary school, we had a full week dedicated to sandwiches and sandwich architecture.
Really?
I swear.
It's very true. That's amazing. I love that. We had that in culinary school, and I was like, this is my week, baby. You know what I mean? It was just my week. And what I loved about it, too, is you look at a lot of menus, right? Especially chef-driven sandwich or burger offerings, and they're just so overblown. And I think it was like that for years ago. I think people are now scaling back with just, you know, I'm going to put a little pickle on this and a little schmear of that and some cheese and maybe something crisp. But you can't overdo it. Like, you can't build, a, you know, the sloppiest world tallest skyscraper without falling and without getting lost in the realm of what is art and architecture. And same thing with sandwiches. You put too much stuff on there, it doesn't work from a mouth standpoint, from getting your mouth around it. But it, like, everything gets muddled in there and everything. So we're going off on tangents. I'm sorry. You want me to get to number two?
Oh, okay, yeah, number two, number two. We got a lot of sandwiches to get through. Let's start doing
it. All right, deli classic. I got to represent the deli phylum here, and that would be an Italian sub. A good, crusty, yet still very light bread, right? Mm-hmm. Enough very well-shaved Italian cold cuts. Doesn't have to be the most imported, most artisanal, local, small batch Italian meats. Could be, you know, good deli meats that are just well, right from the wrapper, shaved mortadella, right? Genoa salami, little thicker, like translucent, you know, prosciutto. You get a little capicola, a little thicker on that, and then provolone. So a cheese that really stands up, right? Something that, you know, makes you sweat when you eat it. And a little good oil, like saturated in oil and vinegar, shaved iceberg lettuce.
Shreddus.
Very thin tomatoes. Maybe some hot jardinera on there. That's what we do here. And boom, you wrap it up in white deli paper or butcher paper. You pour the chips on there. You got it. It's like all, it's like, you know, it seeps through the paper. So you got like and you have, again, a nice diet pop with that. Obviously, I'm not an animal. I have some semblance of control.
The look in your eyes as you describe the layers, people cannot see this, but the look in your eyes, it was like intensity. It was like when Indiana Jones, you know, like sees the treasure finally, it just pops through the screen, and that's beautiful. I like that, yeah. I gotta ask about your pronunciation of capicola, because as someone who in the first three words of your book, you use the phrase maron. I expected to hear a gabagool.
That's a little like gabagool is more like, I think East Coast is more gabagool, like here in Chicagoland area is gabagool. Show me, but I, you know, I didn't know you. I barely know you two. I can't go that deep just yet. You might, you might push the cough
we'll
button.
There.
We're about to start speaking Yiddish.
I say capicola. I don't know. You know, who knows? Like, my dad says gabagool, but like me and my brother say capicola. I say mortadell. I try to take as much vowels off the ends of words as possible.
We both grew up in LA, so like I'm only referencing The Sopranos when I say that, and I need you to know that. To me, it's not. I've never heard anyone say it in the wild.
In the wild, come to my neighborhood, man. It's fun. It's great. You know what? There's some good delis in the LA area.
There sure is. When you were saying that, in my brain, I was like, Bay Cities.
Bay Cities was good.
The Godmother sub.
They got to stop putting mayonnaise on that.
They put mayonnaise on it?
Yeah.
I never noticed.
On the Godmother.
Mayonnaise and mustard on the Godmother.
Yeah. I never noticed.
Which is like, whoa, that's sacrilege out here. That's like so much.
I never thought about that.
You know, I mean, to me, like the Italian meats need that acid to cut through, not like more fat on top of it. For me, it's like, oh my God. But my dad would like sit there. I'll take video of my dad eating mayonnaise on a sub. It is it's like right with just the coated butter knife dipping back into the jar with each bite. It is, Lord. Oh, it's a scene. It's a train wreck. But LA, here we go. I'm going to get to my favorite, the best sandwich.
Well, let's do it.
On the planet. Pastrami on rye. Schmear of deli mustard. That's it.
Yes, sir. And which LA deli are you specifically referencing? Because, I mean, of course, I think we both have our pick.
It's most definitely Langer's. And I know that's like become the thing, but I don't think it was a big. I lived out there in the mid-2000s, right? And it was like twice a month. I'd go there on a Saturday afternoon. You go to buy MacArthur Park. You park your car. Everybody's trying to sell you fake IDs. And then you walk into the thing. And you sit there. I go, give me my hand cut pastrami on rye. I don't want, you know, sometimes I would get the number 13 with the 19 with the rushing. But I like the purity of that. And I'd smear my own mustard. I get a little horseradish. I get extra crispy fries. I love just like the pile of fries with that. Of course, like a diet pop.
Diet soda kills me.
I'm the same. She does not. She drinks a regular cola.
I hate diet soda.
And I think that's bizarre that you drink regular.
You're right. You're correct. Yeah.
I can't. The thought of aspartame makes like my lymph nodes like swollen.
Yeah, so you know it's working.
Oh, stop.
I get done like pounding a diet pop of any sort, and I feel worse than like pounding, whatever, nine natty lights or something, right? So like, I'm like, what did I just do to my body? But it was so fizzy and good going down. And there's still like that thing. It was like, I'm healthy.
Yeah.
I've saved calories. Yeah. We're only a moment. Like if they start doing, you know, like Diet Pop now with protein, I'm in. I'm gonna do one like on the treadmill. Just be like Mentosing all over the treadmill because of the overactive. Okay, so hand cut. That's the best. I've had it everywhere. Mm. Chicago's pastrami scene is very lacking. People are trying here and there. East Coast is great. I'm in New York all the time still. I've been traveling there even last, 6 months and stuff. I love it. Second Avenue Deli, Katz is. Pastrami Queen is good. That's a new addition. But man, Langer's is the freaking best. If you were going to be like, we're going to inject you with the thing, you did some bad things, you're going to put to death, you get one last meal. I'm like, I'm going to kill somebody in LA because at least I can get some Langer's before I die.
Nice.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I'm surprised by an omission. Nicole, did any of those surprise you?
No, none of them. I had a feeling those would be your sandwiches.
The patty melt, I think. She's an empath.
The patty melt did put me for a little bit of a loop because I was thinking, does a hamburger patty exclude it from being a sandwich?
A lot of people would say that, but a lot of people also say it excludes it from being a hamburger.
Mm-hmm. Well,
which,
there you go.
As far as sandwich taxonomy, and this is regionally based because people in the Commonwealth, the thing that I can never get over is they eat a fried chicken sandwich on a round bun and they call it a chicken burger.
Mm-mm.
And I'm like, no. Chicken burger is made from ground chicken meat and also may or may not be a burger depending on who you are.
Yeah.
But so a lot of people, the patty melt to me, I I'm always torn on the patty melt because it's something that people think I would love based on my personality. But for me, I think I'm almost getting the patty melt-ness is taking away from the burger-ness and the burger-ness is taking away from the melt-ness.
Interesting.
Yep. It's its own thing.
You know, it walks the fine line.
Let's just call it what it is. It's the platypus of the sandwich kingdom.
Wow.
It's a platypus. It lays eggs. It's got a duck bill. It's got a spur that has venom in it, a venomous spur.
Yeah.
It's warm-blooded, but
obvious.
It's covered in feathers. Mm-hmm. And did I mention it has a duck bill and swims? It is. That's the patty
and
melt.
And they're very loving house pets.
They're out there. All you got to do is Google. Just Google platypus house pet. You know, like there's at least 16 people across the world.
And they're all in Florida. They're all in Florida. Okay. I was surprised by the omission of the Chicago beef.
I love it.
The Italian beef.
I had one last night. I swear. I have my own beef now. I sell it. It's good. My in-laws came over. I had two beefs by myself. I did combos because I grilled up some of my sausage too. But wow. I love it. I do. I love it. But like, I mean, I love it, but I'm just, these are the ones. I can't, these are the first three born, I guess.
It's a good list. Nicole, do you have any criticisms?
No, I loved your list. Thank you for sharing and thank you for being vulnerable enough to share.
Nicole, I'm curious about yours. I'm curious where you're going here.
Okay, so we're going to start with number three. It's called the Bobby. Do you guys know about the Bobby sandwich?
No, is it
Bobby?
Is it British?
Heard of the Bobby sandwich?
Oh.
You've never heard of it before? Oh my gosh. So there's this place called Capriotti's. Also, I don't travel much, so I've never actually gone to like Delaware where it's from, but it's basically a Thanksgiving sandwich where they have stuffing, cranberry sauce, hand-chopped turkey, and mayonnaise. And I don't know why I love this sandwich so much. Also, there's a disclaimer that says there might be bones in the sandwich, which I love because it makes me live because it's like, I'm going to live dangerously today. Might choke on a turkey bone, whatever. I just love the way it tastes. And I love that it's perfect. It's always perfectly seasoned, their turkey. I don't know how they do it. It's like this beautiful, unctuous turkey. And you never use the word unctuous with turkey, you know?
No.
Yeah. It's a trip. I don't know how they're able to make it so delicious and so mouthwateringly good with just simple stuff. It's just the construction of the sandwich is just gorgeous. I just love it so much. But I can't eat it all the time. That's like a once every 6 month sandwich.
Seasonal.
For me.
It's not an evergreen sandwich.
It's not an evergreen sandwich. But when I eat it, I'm like, yeah.
You criticized me for putting rice in my burritos because it starts on starch. And here you are eating wet bread inside your bread?
Yeah, I just told you it's once every 6 months. Don't be a hater.
Now, wait, you said you had this. It's a place called Capriati's does it, but you make it yourself every 6 months, or you where's Capriati's at?
There's a Capriati's in Beverly Hills. Okay. I grew up in Beverly Hills / Century City. So there was this one, it was just the only one I've ever seen ever. And I would just go there like once every 6 months as a severe craving of mine. You guys want to hear number two?
That's a wild card pick. That's a good number three pick.
That was a good number three because it's left field. Okay. Number two. I'm going to say it's a shrimp po' boy. I love po' boys.
Mm-hmm.
I love fried shrimp. And I go, there's this place where they thinly shave lemon. And they put the thinly shaved lemon on the sandwich.
That's a rich boy. That's a bougie boy.
I don't know. But it's the most, it's just such a transcendent experience. And the remoulade is just perfectly spiced.
Mm. Do you eat the thin lemon?
Yeah, with the rind.
Wow, that's funky.
It's so thin and it just works perfectly with it like cuts through the fried like seafood aspect of everything. And it's just beautiful and bright and delicious. Mm. But somehow it's still light and I can like do stuff afterwards, you know? When I eat a po' boy, I can still be active.
That's
like
right.
I don't need to take a nap. Like after the Bobby sandwich, I need a nap.
Yeah.
After a po' boy, I can walk around and shop.
That's a good point about sandwiches. Like they are utility food.
Yeah.
You know, they're for a person who's got stuff to do.
Yeah, you know? For sure. And then my number one sandwich of all time is Philippe's. It's a French dip sandwich from Philippe's. I go maybe once a month. I go there, I get a beef dip. I get it with American cheese. I get a pickled egg, and I eat it in my car with some hot mustard, and I'm the happiest girl in the world.
Man.
I'm just a happy girl.
Beautiful.
You got to take some video of that. Post some video of you eating the pickled egg and the French dip and the mustard
yes,
in the car.
Thank you.
In the chair.
Thank you
Shards
so much.
Beef everywhere.
But turn it into a YouTube mukbang video.
Exactly.
Be like,
see?
I ate 68 pickled eggs in my car.
If Jeff wants me to mukbang, I guess I got a mukbang now. You put it into the universe, my guy. But yeah, that's my favorite sandwich, the Philippe's French dip. I'm a single dip girl because I have to consider eating it in my car.
Have you ever thought about not eating it in your car? Stupid. Question,
No.
They have indoor seating.
I think there's some, well, because there's something about like exploring LA and like whenever I'm in Chinatown, I'm like, oh, there's this great new spot. I'm going to go there. Or like, oh, I'm going to go try this spot. I'm going to go there. And then I always end up at Philippe's.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. I don't know why. It's like this magnetism. I'm like, I know what I'm getting there. It's delicious. It's consistent. I have to pay in cash. Like I enjoy that, you know?
Yeah.
I enjoy it. It's the scene. It's everything.
That's. I mean, like as much as I love sandwich innovation, and you know I do, and
I
especially love restaurants that innovate so much. But there have been so many times where there has been a new sandwich that pops up, and it sounds very enticing. I remember this one place I went to was actually in Austin, Texas, but they were doing like Chinese American food, but in po' boy form.
Ooh.
So it was like honey walnut shrimp po' boys. I know I made the same faces. I was so excited. And I think they've closed by now, but I went there and it was just bad. It was bad. They made bad food. I mean, because the architecture wasn't there, right? The bun was cold. It wasn't soft enough. I got the sense that it was just like artisanal roll, but it was too crusty to hold the fillings.
I hate that.
So you bite in and then the honey walnut shrimp is so heavily dredged that it's squirting out of, you know, the crust.
It slips out of its cocoon.
Mm-hmm. Slips
Not
out of
fun.
The cocoon. And it's one of those things where it was like all the things weren't thought through in a place like Philippe the Original has had 100 years to think it through.
Yeah, exactly.
They've had 100 years to perfect it. And so many of these like sandwich artists, not the Subway kind.
Subway.
But I mean, Subway, they do good work. They do good work.
He's got his own 100-year thing going on over there.
I'm just shocked you get American cheese on it.
Why are you shocked at my American cheese?
I don't know. I can't imagine. I've never gotten American cheese at Philippe.
Yeah, I love it. I made when I did the Italian beefs last night, right? Uh-huh. It's the same, you know, I think it's a little more seasoned, a little more, you know, crushed red chilies, Italian dry herbs in the Italian beef preparation. And real good shave, prime beef. We love, boom, we dip it. 2 minutes, let it steep. Same thing, right? As the dip, minus you sir on the side. But my son, I make him a cheesy beef, and I did two slices of American cheese on the bottom. And then I made the beef, right? It's wet. It's there if you've ever had a good... But then this is the key. And I love this about, like you wrap it, right? You wrap it for...
Yes,
like,
you have to wrap it.
2 minutes. Just wait.
It's the steam.
He's like, open. I go, whoa, stop. And then the cheese melts and everything kind of, you know, becomes homogenous. I love it.
I love the homogenous sandwiches, man. Yeah. All about the homogenous sandwiches.
I love that. Nicole,
I'm so excited to hear this. I don't even know.
I'm very curious.
Okay, my top three, if anyone's asking. If anyone's asking,
this is what the podcast is about.
I initially had a top three, but I'm now going to change it up a little bit to get some more variety, and then I'm gonna go over what I'm talking about. Okay, number three. I'm gonna go Philly cheesesteak. I'm gonna go classic Whiz Whiz.
Nice.
I'm gonna go
nice.
Classic. There Respect. To me, I mean, I go Birds, Fly Eagles Fly, families from Allentown, PA. I love that so many people have such strong opinions about cheesesteaks and what should be on them, and it varies so regionally. I got into a tiff with the Lehigh Valley Tri-City area and a bunch of their local radio stations because I mentioned an Allentown-style cheesesteak. And I was like, yeah, I think they put like cream cheese on it. And people are like, no, Allentown-style is marinara sauce with pickles. And I'm like, well, of course it is.
Is that really what it is? There's no cheese involved in the Allentown?
No, it's provolone, I believe. Provolone and then pickles and marinara. But then we're going to get a bunch of people commenting on this saying, like, no, it's not. They only put pickles on it in, you know, Easton. Yeah, exactly. But I love that part of it. But to me, it's the ribeye. And I think so many people don't understand how difficult it is to make a good Philly cheesesteak. One, got to start with the hoagie roll. The Amoroso roll is so key to it. Mm-hmm. The perfect amount of chew. The onions shouldn't be caramelized, in my opinion. They should be kind of translucent, soaked in the beef fat. Mm-hmm. And then the beef, it shouldn't have a hard sear either. A lot of people think you got to hit the beef super hard. And you don't. You don't want the crust. You want that steam to create from the beef that starts to render the fat. And then if you're doing white American cheese is also a close second. I'm a softie for Cheese Whiz. But you put the white American cheese on it and then the steam from the beef creates a sauce from the white American cheese because it's so melty. And like Jeff said, when you wrap it, it all just comes together and just becomes so copacetic and beautiful. And you got to eat it with some Utz chips and a couple tasty cakes afterwards. But of course, with a large diet root beer.
There you go.
just give me a regular Barks and I'm happy. No diet root beer.
So Philly cheesesteak number three. It's in the pickled cherry peppers got to go on it. Sure. You know, or popping it after each one.
I respect that.
So that is a beautiful sandwich frame. Number two. I'm going to fudge the pronunciation, but the banh mi dak biet. This is the house special banh mi from any place. And I grew up partly in an area called Little Saigon in Westminster, Fountain Valley, kind of Garden Grove area in Orange County. And there's a place called Banh Mi Che Khali that would have buy two, get one free, 9-inch banh mi sandwiches.
Wow.
And each banh mi was $2.75. So when I was a large, hefty, shot pudding teen boy and I was trying to get my bench press up so I could get a scholarship, I would go and I would get 3 banh mi every single morning before school. And I would just eat them throughout the day. In classes, I would eat 27 inches of sandwich before 2 p.m.
What?
No, this is like the classic version with like the pâté and the, right? Oh, so you were like eating this, and you're just like stanking up the whole room, aren't you? Too?
Yeah.
Big time. And
the kid in the back of the class eating the sandwich.
I would eat it in the weight room. No air conditioning. Weight room under the bleachers.
That's actually 15 times worse that it's in the weight room. I'm so sorry. That was in the classroom.
It was both. But the banh mi dak biet, it's got the Vietnamese cold cuts. One's called cha lua. That's like this almost sort of bologna-ish. It's like a force beat that's very springy. And then you have the pate spread on there. You have that super rich. I believe they use a combination of butter and mayonnaise, actually.
Okay.
It's that super egg yolk rich yellow with the Maggi seasoning sauce in it. You got the pickled vegetables, the dochua. You got the daikon and the carrot. You got the fresh jalapenos, which are a very California addition that they say from Mexican line cooks working at Vietnamese restaurants. Mm-hmm. The fresh cilantro, the cucumber. To me, it's undefeated. It's got also the Vietnamese baguette, which a lot of people think is cut with rice flour, but it's not. It's the dough conditioners in it that make it so light.
Wish more French sandwich places would use that bread. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
It's always way too dense or way too crusty. You carve the roof out of your mouth. But any, Vietnamese preparation, any Vietnamese banh mi sandwich is mm-hmm. always the even if it's like real kind of like hole in the wall joint, the bread is on point.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's funny, in my French class in high school, Madame Keith, when we would cater these like French club events, and mm-hmm. she taught us to make jambon beurre, which is a fine sandwich
great
in
sandwich.
Itself. Yeah. She started using baguettes from this French place, and then she comes in, she's like, I found this beautiful place called Lee's Sandwiches. It is the Vietnamese, I believe, and their baguette, oh my God, it is the best I've had since I was in France. Mm-hmm. So I love that. So banh mi, absolutely undefeated. But the number one, number one sandwich in my book. I thought that we were going to go 3 for 3 on wet sandwiches. Jeff, I thought you were going to do the Italian beef, but you didn't. And so now we're only 2 for 3 on absolutely wet sandwiches. But it is the torta ahogada from Guadalajara, Jalisco.
Wow. Ooh. Amazing.
Single greatest sandwich. It is like a French dip from Philippe's. It satisfies all those cravings, like the Italian beef, where you get the meat that is soaked in sauce and the bread just kind of coalesces in all of that. Except in this, instead of, you know, a French roll, you get birote salado, if they're doing it right, if they're getting their bread from Guadalajara. And my favorite spot in Tortas Ahogada Guadalajara in North Hollywood, they get their bread imported. It is this super salty sourdough, very crusty bread, and the salt actually gives the bread a ton of structure.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then you cut that open and you stuff it with carnitas, which of course has been, you know, kind of boiled in its own fat, slowly confiting, getting crispy yet fatty, and you put that inside this crusty salty bread, and then you drown it in a chile de árbol in tomato sauce.
Ooh.
And then it just sits in there, and you gotta get it bien ahogada, you gotta get that well drowned, and then you top it with just lightly marinated vinegared red onions.
Okay.
And then if you talk to Selena, the owner, and then she says, you like it extra spicy? And you go, yeah, I like it extra spicy. And then she takes just straight chile de árbol and shoves it on there. And then you eat it with your hands, and then the chili soak into your hands, and then your mouth is on fire, but there's so much fat from the pork, and that the bread still is holding up to the last bite, Nicole and Jeff. It does not waver.
Wow.
The torta ahogada from Guadalajara, Jalisco, best sandwich in the world.
Oh, good choice.
None of us put Reuben in our top three.
I don't know. I'm like having a change of heart a little bit because I feel so bad for not including any like Jewish deli food because it's so connected to my culture and like who and like LA and everything like that. So I don't know. I kind of want to maybe switch my Bobby and have it as an honorable mention and then maybe put in like, I don't know, a corned beef sandwich.
The Bobowitz.
I don't know. There's something, I feel bad that I didn't include a deli sandwich.
I will say when I got sick over the holidays and I was really craving comfort food, my girlfriend Julia wanted to order matzo ball soup, and then I was looking over the deli menu, and my like comfort food from the deli that I wanted to order was a chopped liver and corned beef sandwich. Not pastrami either, corned beef.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Okay. The smoke, it overtakes the liver. And it was really bad. That was just this one deli was really bad. But I will say, like, the instinct in my mind to go to that chopped liver and corned beef combination as, like, I am in distress, I need a food to comfort me, I think that shows a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I feel you.
God, that was a bad sandwich.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
All right, Nicole and Jeff, we've heard what you and I have to say. Now it's time to find out what other wacky ideas are rattling out there in the Twitterverse. It's time for a segment we call
Opinions Are Like Casseroles.
It rhymes with casserole. All right, starting with at @PollardJim3. Uh-oh. Please tell me I'm not the only person who eats the skin on a mango, but it has to be perfectly ripe. Oof. It's like fruit leather, and I love it. Oof. Jeff, what do you think about that one?
I mean, that's like, you know, primal. I mean, if that's your bag, I don't mind. I mean, I don't think I could, like, does he eat it like an apple or a pear? I mean, is he just going in? Right, with
probably.
His teeth? Yeah.
I got it. I feel like we need a disclaimer here that this is like dangerous, right?
I was going to let you handle this.
Mango skin straight up poisonous? Well, I mean, he's not dead. I don't think he's trolling either. I believe him.
I think to some people, mango skin is poisonous.
It's because it's related to poison oak. Is that what it is?
I'm not sure what it's related to, but I have heard on multiple occasions that people have gotten sick from eating mango skin.
They literally call it mango mouth. I had a coworker go to the hospital with mango mouth.
Shut up. From eating mango skin or just eating too much mango?
It was something crazy. It was he was grilling mango. And then I guess he was grilling it skin on, you know, kind of did the whole like scoring thing and grill it. And I think it was something to do with the heat, sort of like getting whatever toxins are on the outside of the skin into the mango.
Scary.
And then, he ended up at the hospital. Don't eat mango skin. If anybody else is out there eating mango skin, use this as a PSA. This is the first time I will come down harshly on an opinion.
Yeah.
Yep. Not safe. Sorry. I concur.
All right, Nina P 528 says shredded cheese is just cheese zest.
No, it's not, because the zest is the outside of something. The shredded cheese is all of it.
Yeah,
right?
Cheese zest does exist though.
What?
You know what cheese zest is for me? You get to like the end of the parm where you're like close to the rinds, and you're like, there's just enough flavor left for me to get something out of this.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you're zesting the rind and it's an edible rind. Then that's cheese zest.
So this is
an incorrect opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're on to something a little bit. A
little bit.
All right. At Yeah, You Better Run, there does not exist a better salad dressing option than whatever hot sauce is in one's fridge. They're almost always healthier, tastier, and cheaper than a dressing. My favorite is Green Dragon Trader Joe's.
I mean, but that's more than a hot sauce. That Green Dragon, I think it's really good, but it's a little more complex than Cholula or Tabasco or, you know, Crystal. But dousing just greens in like straight up small bottle hot sauce, I don't know. I mean, you need a little more fat to carry it around, I guess. Yeah. No.
That's heavy. That's just straight hot sauce on greens. That's a bit much.
That's too much. Yeah. I need something to cut through that.
Like, it reminds me of a very bodybuilder thing to do.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I need to get the greens in me and I can't have a single other macro. And so
mustard.
Trappy's Louisiana hot sauce is zero carbs, zero whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like a bodybuilder type of thing.
Mustard
to do.
And hot sauce.
Mustard.
And a little bit of water.
Bodybuilder
salad dressing.
Watching my buddy just put mustard on white rice and eat it. I'm like, why not soy sauce? Soy sauce is the same amount of calories.
And then it's like, that's chased by like, 8 poached chicken breasts that they just tear through.
Oh gosh!
Like a hyena, and there's like, I don't know. I did cybergenics when I was in like, I forget, 16 years old, which was like this program used to get at GNC. It was like 2 weeks, and all you would eat is like whole chicken and marinara sauce and like nothing else, and iceberg lettuce. It was horrible. And drink shakes. That's what it reminds me of. And we just coat the greens in just balsamic, no oil.
Yeah,
it would just be sitting there dripping.
Oh my God. I'm very lucky that I practiced a thing called dirty bulking, which is what it's called in the community, which is eat as much as possible, as often as possible, and lift as much weight, which is how I was able to enjoy so many delicious bun me.
Dirty bulking, huh?
Look at dirty that.
Dirty bulking.
I just bookmarked dirtybulking.com.
Oh, yeah. Don't go to that one. Don't go to that one. Oh, no. Dot edu is the one you want to go to.
Yeah.
Dot gov.
Bone Say says any dish that is made using beans can be vastly improved by not including beans. Go ahead, Jeff.
Wow.
This is upsetting.
Okay, so we're looking at chili. We're looking at burritos for sure. Like a black bean burger, obviously, would just be whatever binding and whatever other grain you might fit in there. But I think I'm going to kind of agree with this because I like beans. I like chili beans in my chili, right? Like the big bright red kidney beans glowing. But I love chili without beans as well. I do not like beans in my burritos, nor do I like rice. I'm like steak, lettuce, avocado, sour cream, hot sauce per bite kind of thing. So yeah, I'm gonna agree. What was this person's name? This Twitter
Bone Say.
I think they're right.
We'll DM you. We'll DM you them so you can connect and just talk about it.
Please.
Just bean hatred.
Share likes, fears.
I love beans. I think beans are a fantastic addition to meals that don't include beans. Like throw it in a salad. Throw it in your rice. I actually love beans, and I think they should be celebrated more. So this hurt my feelings.
Have you heard about the bean diet? Like, it's supposed to like do wonders for your skin. The bean diet. Yeah, it's like you incorporate beans in like every meal, and it's supposed to like clear up everything. I can't. Not that I'm saying your skin is.
I'm going to.
You're glowing as we speak through this
Thank
small
you.
Google
you
Hangout screen, but It's I don't know, my wife. So she like read about, she did a lot of, and beans are making a lot of it appearances in our meals these days. I'll put it that way.
Nice.
And I've never glowed harder.
He's smizing, folks. He's smizing. I love beans. Beans, I will answer this hot take with an even worse hot take. I believe any dish that includes a non-crispy potato would be better if it was beans. Instead of mashed potatoes, hit me with them refritos. Instead of any potato in a soup, might as well be a big old cranberry bean. I think that beans are a more perfected form of potato. French fries, hash browns, everything else, potatoes rule supreme. That's their core competency. But nah, if you're going soft potato, give me a bean.
Wow.
That's what the heck I'm about.
Okay.
Like a mashed, like refried bean style, mm-hmm. You know, on the Mexican American kind of platter deal.
Yep.
Instead of, you'd rather have, not that I'm saying the mashed potato, but that's what I'm mm-hmm. judging. Those two I'd rather have mashed potatoes swarming in gravy than really.
Wow. Nah, wait, man. Give me the yellow cheese on the silky refried beans.
Silky.
And that, what? Oh, I know I'm the villain here. Now I'm the villain.
Oh my God.
When they're made with lard, though, there's nothing better. And they're like, you eat them and they're like, oof.
Mm-hmm. Gotta put the lard in there.
It's not even a bean. Mm,
I can feel the texture. All right, we got at S. Neely. A sprinkle of sugar on top of scrambled eggs is chef's kiss, and you can't change my mind.
I'll try it. I don't know. I'm intrigued.
You should.
You've had it? It's good?
I have done it. It's not good, but it's one of those things that reminds you of food that is good. So, Japanese tamagoyaki.
Yeah, that's where I was going to.
If you ever had it. You know, it's got that sweet mirin in it. Yeah. And so that's the first thing I thought of, except it's like without the other 9 ingredients that make Japanese tamagoyaki good.
Uh-huh.
But you still taste it and you're like, oh, I see where their brain made the connection. Or like a scrambled flan that you screwed up, but you still eat it because, you know, they're your ingredients. And yeah.
Oh, my God.
Ugh,
no, you guys toss it?
I don't even like, successfully made flan. So I couldn't even imagine.
Scrambled flan sounds like a good punk band.
Yeah, it is. But, like hardcore post-punk.
Yeah, but I would also never eat scrambled flan. I would also never put sugar on top of... There's something about the texture of scrambled eggs and how sometimes they're like a little bit like crispy sometimes. You know what I mean? That crispy egg with sugar sprinkled on it instantly makes my gag reflex
activate. You two are weak.
No, this reminds me of... I like... Now, this might be controversial as well. Might be a future hot take. I love like egg McMuffins or anything... You know, sausage patty, scrambled eggs, American cheese, English muffin, and then I always smear a little bit of that little thing of grape jelly or strawberry jelly if I'm at
home.
That's
good.
Like a smear of, like, I'm not saying gobs of it. That to me always, even the hash browns, I would do a little plastic knife with each bite. I'd put a little grape jelly on there. I still do it.
I'm down with that. I'm right? down with that. There's something about the granular sugar that makes me like,
That makes sense. The last time I had grape jelly, it was actually grape jelly and mustard on a breakfast sandwich. And this is a great honorable mention for my Philly regional sandwiches, is the Scrapple egg and cheese.
That's a classic.
Is that Scrapple related?
It is.
Yeah.
There is so much fat and funk in the Scrapple that you need the confusion of the purple and the yellow on there.
Great.
The old purple yellow.
Kenzie Reinhardt says caramel belongs on pizza more than ranch on pizza.
Ugh, stupid. What does that even mean?
We've broken Jeff.
Well, I mean, who's had caramel on pizza before? You've had it? You both have? Is this an LA thing? Is this like, what?
No, this is a Mythical Kitchen thing.
Yeah, we got a weird job.
Yeah, we got a weird job.
Is it good? What do you, I mean,
I'll,
I guess I'll
explain.
I could see.
So we had an episode called What's the Best Pizza Dip? Okay.
Yeah.
And it's our job to test things before they go out on the show. You know, we test and we make sure we perfect it. So we had every single dip you could imagine. We had nacho cheese. We had caramel. We had this. We had that. We had the other. Caramel isn't horrific.
Mm-hmm.
Hear me out. It's not disgusting. It's not horrific. It's like hot honey.
Yeah.
It's almost just like hot honey.
Colorado Mountain Pizza, their whole thing is you dip it in honey. They serve every pizza with honey. Might as well caramel. You get that little extra burnt notes on it, you know?
I think caramel works. It's not as good as ranch. I don't think anything is better than ranch on pizza.
No
but
way.
It does work. And
so
I'm going to give Kenzie that much.
I love ranch. I mean, you swipe it right through that ranch just per bite or wait for the crust. You still got that, and then you repuddle up. And then you go right into the thing, and then you let it sit there, and then you squeeze the crust so it absorbs the ranch like a sponge. That's the move all day.
When you bite into the pizza crust soaked in ranch, and you make the sucking noise to suck the ranch out of there with the pepperoni grease. That, my friends, that's a local man.
High five.
High five for the Farsi reference.
Thank you. Josh likes to sprinkle in some Farsi because of Persian.
She's
so
teaching
every
me
now
Farsi.
And then he throws it in. I'm like, hey.
Well, Josh, from my record here, Josh has spoken four languages this podcast so far.
Wow, so you did. Worldly. Look at
did
you.
A little French. He's got Vietnamese. This guy. Don't let the headband fool you. He's educated.
You went to culinary school. I was studying international relations and also failed
shot putting.
Out of college.
Were you really shot? You were a shot putter in high school or college? You were
Yeah, so I went to school on a shot put and discus scholarship, but then I ended up becoming a hammer thrower was my biggest event. So I threw hammer at UCLA.
That's amazing, man. What a path. Right? Is that
yeah,
cool?
Man. That direct hammer throwing to podcast pipeline.
It is. Everybody's doing it. Everybody's trying.
All right, and on that note, thank you for listening to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich. To enjoy more from Jeff, you can check out his new cookbook, Come On Over, 111 Fantastic Recipes for the Family That Cooks, Eats, and Laughs Together. You can also catch him on his podcast, also called Come On Over, where he and his sister Emily talk about food, their upbringing, and tons of lively family stories. Jeff, where else can our listeners check you out?
Yeah, Come On Over. I'm really proud of it. We're like 50 episodes in, a couple seasons. It's fun. So do that and go to marlprovisions.com. We just came out with our honey jardinera yesterday or on Friday. So it's the first ever cured in honey and agave, and it's packed in oil. It's so bright. It's so beautiful. When is this podcast here? I think we just sold out, but I'm just do it, whatever. Sorry. I don't want to like set people up for, but it's good. Go to marlprovisions.com. I got Italian beef kits, prime Italian beef kits. Our sausage made locally. It's the best, like Italian food.
We're going right there.
I'm buying some stuff from the Marlprovisions.
Honey jardinera. It's got that like bread and butter.
Wow.
All right. And if you want to hear more from us here in the Mythical Kitchen, we got new episodes for you every Wednesday.
If you want to be featured on Opinions Are Like Casseroles, you can hit us up on Twitter at @MythicalChef or @Nhendizadeh with the hashtag #OpinionCasserole.
And of course, if you want to share pics of your dishes, hit us up on the Instagram at Mythical Kitchen. See y'all next time. Jeff, thanks again, man.
Thanks, Jeff.
For having me guys on. Thanks for having me guys on. Well, I'm going to go get on the e-bidet. The smart bidet. I gotta go cleanse my mouth.